Welcome to A World of Fragile Truths. This is a podcast by the knowledge platform Security and Rule of Law, where assumptions driving current security and rule of law policies and practices are being put to the test. Every episode, new evidence is put to the table and unpacked by colleagues from at least two different parts within the sector: researchers, policymakers, and practitioners. My name is Christian Kuijters, and today's guests are the director of the think tank Somali Public Agenda. His name is Mahad Wasugi. And we have Abdinasir Hussain, who works as an M&E officer for Conflict Dynamics International. The topic is what we'll call the knowledge economy. Mahad and his colleagues wrote a very urgent paper on how development cooperation leans strongly on a professionalized international information market, which has many perverse power dynamics underneath. So, what is that power behind the information? Why is it especially relevant for fragile settings like Somalia? And how to bring back local knowledge into our work? Very happy to have you here, Abdinasir and Mahad. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Christian.
Maybe a quick introduction for our listeners. Can you share something about yourself, Abdinasir?
Thank you, Christian. My name is Abdinasir Farah Hussain. You can call me Abdinasir Hussain. I work with Conflict Dynamics, based here in Nairobi with the Somali program, and I've been working in Somalia for 3 years now. Prior to that, I worked with other humanitarian organizations in the field. My experience is more of monitoring, evaluation, and learning.
Happy to have you here. What about you, Mahad?
My name is Mahad Wasugi. I'm the executive director of the Somali Public Agenda, a think tank based in Mogadishu that works to advance, understand, and improvement of governance and public service in Somalia. I'm a researcher. I do policy research and have been doing research on governance in Somalia for many years now.
Yeah, thanks. And you wrote this paper that I just mentioned, right, about what I call the knowledge economy. Maybe you have different words for it. I also called it urgent. Is that the case? Is it being picked up? Is it a hot topic in your experience?
Yes, Kristen, it's an important topic in Somalia. Actually, we are in the stage where the government is trying to develop its own organizations, that institutions, I mean, that work on recording and disseminating data. The National Bureau of Statistics was established. There is a discussion on data privacy, and there is increase in number of Somali researchers doing studies, trying to publish along with other and non-Somali scholars. International organization is doing a lot of data collection for humanitarian development in Somalia. So it's a timely and very interesting to write about.
Yeah, so there's a lot of dynamic around this topic right now going on with the government working on it, but also discussions on data privacy. And Abdinasir, are these topics also very, you mentioned you work in M&E, so you work a lot also with data collection, etc. Are these topics that you encounter a lot in your work as well?
Yeah, exactly. I think the paper, not only does it show that these issues are very important, it also shows that the policy cycle needs to be revisited. Wrong information feeds into a wrong policy, and then the cycle continues. And I think it's a very important document. But in terms of the basic information that NGOs use and how they generate, it's something that I think we'll also we'll be discussing in the podcast as we move on.
So Abdinasir is mentioning the policy cycle. Is that a topic that you also want to expand upon, Mahad? What do we mean by that, and that it has to be improved?
Yeah, it's the discussion on this humanitarian organizations and development actors collecting a lot of data. Actually, some of them personal data has been and how that data is protected has been a discussion. This podcast is coincided with a week where the a project called the Pahnano, a social safety net project, where UN organizations are part of, and that the government is also leading, is that one of the ministries was basically talking about the data kept by UN agencies, that when the government asked them to hand over this huge data they have, that they said that Somalia does not have a data protection act, so we cannot hand over this data to you. So the minister was basically saying, who gave them the right to keep the data?
So the discussion is on data security and data, who owns which data is going on actually as we speak, you say. Are there other key points in this piece that should definitely be picked up?
Well, a lot of issues we discussed in the paper is that the data collected is not always disseminated, and that a fraction of it is basically used, and that many data collected is basically ticking boxes. Yeah. So disseminating and the uptake of this knowledge generated is one of the things we highlight in the study, and that's also very important because people who are the respondents or informants for the study are just feeling interview fatigue, whereby multiple organizations are coming with papers and pens, collecting data, and then going back, nothing back. They don't see the report, they don't see anything out of it. So that's also another key issue we discussed in the paper.
Have you ticked a lot of boxes, Abdi Nasir, in your work? And do you see that fatigue that Mahad is talking about in practice? What does that look like? Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, very good. The data fatigue or the interview fatigue is a very eminent issue that is raised by respondents, by beneficiaries, and the expectation is that when data is collected, some sort of assistance follows, and that might not always mean the case. And there is also a difference in terms of relationship, I mean in terms of power between the data collectors and the interviewers on one side, and the beneficiaries on the other side. And that's also another important thing in terms of this paper. And when that fatigue comes up, the ability of these beneficiaries to raise these issues and who to raise with is also limited. Like, they don't have the power to communicate their challenge or the fatigue they even face. And I think that unequal relationship is also affecting the conveying, how they can convey that message, I think. And that's also another very important and key issue raised in the paper.
And can you sketch for our listeners who might not have a clear image of what that means in practice? What are we talking about when it's fatigue? What do the people that you talk to, what do they say about this?
In terms of the interview fatigue, you have multiple and sometimes to some extent duplicating type of efforts to get information, and several projects implemented by several organizations will be asking information and asking questions, and when these subsequent efforts of interviewing the beneficiaries come, and the beneficiaries feel that they are being asked the same questions over and over again, beneficiaries tend to expect something. And when that information is collected and no return comes back, I think that the fatigue comes from there. And I think on the part of the organizations, there is this quick effort to just get the data, might be by the baseline, end line evaluation, and not to be clear with the beneficiaries.
So that's a very, very clear picture that you are sketching here of, you know, different organizations coming in, asking the same questions, not sharing the data that they are actually gathering. And another factor is power, of course, that there are often Western consultants that go back to their headquarters and analyze this. What are the effects of this, Mahad, that you see in the sector?
Yes, I really agree with Abdel Nasser on the interview fatigue, and part of that is that there is no coordination among those eight organizations collecting data. They could have used the data collected by other organizations, and there's no such repositories or platforms to share, and that the government role is also missing there, and the government does not even aware how this data is collected. And the effects of this are many, and one of it is that, and we actually highlighted in the paper, is that often this data is collected by what we call enumerators or field monitors or Somali youth who go to this field and collect data. Some of them, because of this interview, they cook the data basically. They answer themselves and do the answers and pretend that they have collected, because they are supposed to do a certain number of interviews per day, going to the field. And the other challenge is that it basically some of them lack this proper research ethics, and this all question the quality of the data we are talking about.
And what does that then mean? If the quality is not good, what does that mean for a Somalian citizen, let's say? Because of course it's all rather abstract and indirect, what we're talking about right now, but what is then the real-time effect that we're seeing?
Yeah, it's maybe Abdel Nasser is also can jump in this, but it's basically misrepresenting the Somalis. It's a data that does not reflect the actual realities, and you may have come across third-party monitoring reports written in a good language and talking about a lot of good progress done, but if you actually visit the locations where these projects are implemented, there's nothing there. So it misrepresents the citizens, and it actually misleads the donors who have invested resources to implement these projects.
Yeah, thank you. Can you think of a moment, Abdel Nasser, where you realized, like, yes, this is happening exactly because of this misrepresentation, because of the problems that we're talking about right now? Can you think of an example or something that you've experienced?
I would like to first start with how this can be problematic. The first one is if you have assessments that are based on things that do not really exist on the ground and fabricated data, for example, then you have wrong programming, which means you will be coming up with solutions that do not match the problem, that do not really represent what people are really feeling. And I think that it is repercussions. And the other thing is, even this policy, evaluations, for example, contribute to policy formulation, they contribute to the further programming, and you stay in a vicious cycle of wrong information leading into a wrong decision leading into a new way of collecting data. And I think that is very important to look into. In terms of this information, I would like to tell you that it's not something that happens on an occasional basis. It's a very daily occurrence where you see enumerators trying to cook data, and it happens a lot in the field. For example, when you cannot travel into that area and you ask enumerators to do data collection, ask questions and do interviews, and they just put some information together. I will give you an example. You will find instances that they even do not check what sex they are putting in. They will put male in the position of female, and that might seem simple in when you look at it, but the repercussions that can have and the deepness of the problem it shows is also another example. I mean, somebody who does not check whether X is male or female, and just continuous feeling shows you that he didn't really do the interview. So these are issues that I think have a very greater consequence for the people of Somalia. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Abdunasir, this is this also relate in part shows that the power dynamics and that the enumerators are just used as tools, and they most of them are not part of the design phase of the studies. They are not invited when the questions are set, and they are just recruited to collect the data with long list of questions that may bother the respondents who are already feeling interview fatigues. And it shows that it's the power dynamic is people who get the credit for all this work are those staying in safe places in Nairobi and beyond, and that these enumerators are taking the risks to travel to remote areas, risk their lives, and get a fraction of money for that primary work they are doing.
Yeah. So the power dynamics result in data collection that is inefficient, that is also disrespectful. Well, let's talk a bit more about this after the break, and also see, of course, what we can do about this. You post some good recommendations in your paper. But let's first hear what our listeners regard as fragile truths in the security and rule of law sector.
A current fragile truth in the sector, I would say, is cooperation, partnerships. We all gather to share what we're doing, but we don't really talk about failures, what could be done in a better way, and also having a real inner reflection on how we should be working in the future for the most in need.
I think a fragile truth is thinking that peace is not possible. If you read the news headlines every day, you can grow so despaired at the idea that conflict is just going to continue forever. In the case of Afghanistan, it's many, many decades long crisis. But if we go back to the origins and we look back at this asymmetric power notion, that small local initiatives can bring peace to certain communities. And that's the first step you need in order to create sustainable and positive peace.
Thanks everyone for sharing those fragile truths. We'll get back to our conversation here. We've laid out the problem quite clearly, I think, and I'd be curious to first hear a bit more of maybe specific projects where this really came to surface, and after that we can also dive into what solutions are at hand. Abdinasir, do you have a specific, maybe a project in mind where you really saw this happening?
Yeah, I will keep it short. When you have baselines that do not inform the program or provide the wrong information, then you have wrong results, and it will be very difficult for you to achieve the goals that you set for yourself. And I will give you an example of it's one piece building project. I don't wish to name it, but the indicators were set very high based on discussions, but not based on real data collected from the field. It was collected from politicians, discussions with politicians, which seemed to be showing data, and it did not capture the real challenge, and would not be able to enable the organization to set clear indicators for programming. And I think that's a very important issue. Yeah.
So you're mentioning indeed that this bad data that is collected not in the right way leads to wrong baselines, wrong indicators that will lead the project into a direction that is not very effective. Mahad, do you see that happening as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That's correct. And that the data, the quality of the data collected is also influenced by other gatekeepers. You know, it's important to highlight also that local government officials who basically closely work with enumerators collecting data have also an influence in who to speak to, IDPs, for instance, have gatekeepers who will not allow you to get a proper random sampling, and that will bring you any individual he or she wants to you to interview. Local actors preferring development interventions and programs for certain neighborhoods or villages, and that you will see in, for instance, a district in Somalia where water wells is projects is implemented in one neighborhood and or a village, but the neighboring village is actually does not have any of a similar project. So this misrepresenting data is actually creating a lot of duplications. A lot of organizations implementing the same project in a certain village. These are all the results of such misrepresenting data.
Does that mean that many of those projects are actually redundant?
Definitely, yes. Yeah.
And I think, Mahad, that's a very important issue to raise. And if you look at the principles of humanitarian aid, the primary is that it should be based on need. And I think the issues of accountability and beneficiary-centered responsiveness is something that this wrong information and data puts into question. If you have data that's manipulated, information that's manipulated, that leads to underplaying the need in some area, for example, and showing only certain areas that a certain group or gatekeepers want to be funded or supported, then you have a big problem more than even the policy itself. You look into the very principles and foundations of why aid organizations and donors are supposed to be supporting these people.
Yeah, and I just wanted to also highlight these organizations collect data, including images, phone numbers, and sometimes fingerprints. They have their own storage policies. For instance, some organizations may have, they keep this data in iCloud or Dropbox. They can keep what as long as they want, and that they have their own data disposal policies. For instance, some organizations may have a policy that allows them to keep this type of data for 5 years and then destroy after 5 years. And there is no such data protection act in Somalia, as I discussed in the past. So this is also another concerning issue, and that some of the third-party monitoring companies who actually are making a profit use this type of data to sell themselves and win projects.
And that links to in your piece. You also discuss how the problems that we just sketched are extra urgent in countries like Somalia, where there is just not a lot of regulations, maybe, but also where data collection is more difficult because the systems are not in place. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. There is lack of data privacy policies and data protection acts in Somalia. And that is because of the weak government institutions we have and who are that are recovering from years of conflicts. And this is actually the main reason why these organizations keeping the data just use as a justification. They just say that they cannot trust this data with the government because there is no act that allows the government to manage, or the government does not have this type of capacity. And the discussion has been ongoing for a while, and now we have seen that two main data centers were now handed over to the government, which is a good progress by FAO.
Mm-hmm. Do you see other good signs or possibilities for improvement?
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing. And the first thing is that the federal government is statistics or national statistics center is now functioning. But also, before I look into the opportunities, I would like to also raise the how dangerous some of these small things in data can also be. For example, some of these projects that we carry out have some sensitive nature, like projects related to peace building, related to conflict resolution and related stuff. If you develop a very simple case story, for example, and even if you get the consent and you share it around, does that put somebody in the wanted list of, for example, Al-Shabaab? I mean, how dangerous is it for this individual? These are things that we look into. They might now seem simple, but they are very important. And in terms of how this large data is handled, I think the Myanmar Rohingya case can be a very good example, where some of the information, including biometric information, was disclosed falling in the hand of the government. And these are this information is an openly available information. So I think these are very important issues. Not only do they put the livelihoods of people at risk, but the life itself. And I think in that sense, it's very important. In terms of the things that are positive, and I think we can start from the paper itself. It's a positive thing that people are recognizing this, that an information research done on this specific topic is available for policymakers, for organizations to look into the depth of the problem. And I also see the revival of the statistics agency of the government, a very good move that I think will help in the storage of information.
I think the challenge they are facing is now is that those organizations who keep this data are reluctant and trying to create excuses for the government that they cannot trust the government with this data. And what we are seeing is also reluctance and lack of willingness to give the government a proper chance to play its crucial role in this.
And is that also the, if I'd ask you one thing that has to happen with this paper that you wrote, would that be the thing, or what is the most important message that you want to get across to our international audience?
The most important thing is that the government authorities and the international actors work together to promote the production, storage, and dissemination of publicly available data, analysis, and statistics. And in particular, they need to establish online and offline repositories where data are archived and accessible.
And from your point of view, Abdi Nasir?
I think I agree with Mahat. And I think the most important thing is it's a wake-up call, number one, that we are in this challenge, that we need to take data protection, not only data protection and management, but also the whole process of how data is managed in Somalia. And I think it provides a guidance in terms of what has to be done and how it should be done, which includes the data protection, which includes more robust measurements in terms of establishing and checking data collection protocols and coordination. Coordination is also another key issue raised in the paper, and I think it's important that we all coordinate data collection, management, and usage even to avoid duplication of efforts and funding. NGOs, organizations, I mean, whether it's the UN or everybody, is has no enough money. Nobody has enough money to do what they want to do. So while we have that problem, it will be another wastage of resources to duplicate activities while you can find the ready-made data. So it's a holistic way that I think provides solutions.
And to end on a positive note, maybe Mahad, do you see examples of where this is happening?
Yes, it's, there is a positive example, which is that the National Bureau of Statistics is now will be managing the two main data centers created by FAO, called the Food Security and Nutrition Analysis Unit, FSNAU, and Somali Water and Land Information Management, SWALIM. So this is a good sign that the government is actually taking over and playing its role in managing big data in Somalia.
Well, let's hope more good examples follow. It was a real privilege to have this talk with you both. Keep up the good work. And listeners, of course, keep your eyes open for those fragile truths out there. And let's meet again in the next episode.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.
And Abdel Nasser.
Thank you so much, Christian.